This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
Welcome. This is Making Yourself at Home radio show and podcast,
where you can listen to wonderful stories from many migrants in New Zealand and learn from their experience. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. We are here at Access Radio Taranaki, Making Yourself at Home on 105.4 FM, your voice, your choice. And today we are with a special guest, Robbie Keck. He is from Australia and he is teaching yoga, and I am sure doing other things in different places, but he will tell us more about it. Welcome, Robbie.
Thanks, Clara. It's nice to be here with so many interviewers. it's a big spread.
Yeah, I know we are three, but we are very gentle, so we are not talking all in the same time, and we have very nice questions for you.
We will have very nice.
I'm sure you do. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Mm. And because I don't know anything about you, I mean, Clara told me some things, that you are a yoga instructor.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to tell us first, when did you arrive in New Zealand, and
sure,
what made you come here and choose this place?
Yeah. I didn't send through like bio information, so I apologize for that. I just sent you through a photo of me eating a piece of cake. So that's all you got from me.
We know you like cake.
I definitely, yeah. So I came over here kind of like a little bit by happenstance. So I was at a loose end in terms of I had finished some things in Australia, and I was traveling around the world. And I had friends that had moved here and were living here with their small boy, who had been, one of them had been working for me, Carl Freeman. So he's kind of known for growing food, but now he teaches at WIT.
Nice.
And yeah, and so I just came to visit, really. And that was in the back half of 2008, or halfway through 2018, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was like, cool. I got a job teaching yoga at what was the Wellness Project, which is now Riva. Yeah.
Ah, beautiful.
And so I was like, oh, I've got a job. There's a cool place by the ocean. I'd never lived by the ocean. I had previously lived inland in Australia, like river. I was kind of like a river boy, a river man. Mm. And I'm like, wow, ocean, how amazing. A mountain with snow. Like, I think Taranaki is the same size almost as the biggest mountain in Australia. So I'm like, wow, mountain with snow, there's the ocean.
Yeah.
I walked around the mountain in the first 2 weeks that I was here.
Okay.
And I kind of just fell in love with the nature and with the sort of solitude. And then with my first yoga teaching job, which was very exciting, I kind of had a bit of a foundation. And basically I thought, well, you know, I'll just stick around for however long. And I think the COVID thing happened like at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And so I was, before then, I think I bought a house like a couple of months before COVID happened.
Did you? Wow, amazing.
What so timing. Things were moving, things were moving pretty fast.
To have your
Yeah, but it just felt kind of fairly organic.
Mm.
And I was just sort of following the direction that it felt like the universe was pointing.
Yeah.
And that was fun at the time. That was lots of fun. Yeah.
Amazing, yeah. And you said that you were doing rounds around the mountain?
Yeah. I walked around the mountain. Yeah. So I think that was like 3 or 4 days. And I stayed in maybe three different huts. Holly Hut, a lake dive hut before it burnt down, because that burnt down a couple of years ago, I think. The hut closer to North Egmont, I can't remember the name of that one.
Yeah.
It's quite pretty, the view. And there's no one on the south side. So like I had like almost 2 days of walking on my own and not seeing any humans. And I'm like, wow, this is pretty amazing.
You liked it, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. My plan to come to New Zealand was just to do lots of walks. So I did the Abel Tasman walk. I did the Heafy track.
Okay.
And I walked a little bit between Arrowtown and Queenstown. I was mostly kind of coming for the nature, and because I'd never been to New Zealand, you know, and I was 38 when I moved here. And I'm like, oh, it's just like in my backyard, you know, just a short trip for Australia, close neighbor. My mum had spent some years here and my first brother was born here. So there's some family connection. But it's kind of funny because a lot of people say, oh, where are you from? And, oh, Australia. I'm like, what are you living here for? Like, most New Zealanders go and live in Australia, not Australians coming to live here.
Yes.
There are some more reasons. And, I mean, I could touch in on that now, but I'm not sure if you have any specific questions you would like to ask me or...
It's a great question.
I'll ask my own questions and answer them.
No, because I was going to ask you the difference between Australia and New Zealand culturally.
Culturally.
In general, what have you noticed since you moved here, which perhaps is aligned with the more of the reasons why you are here.
Yep.
Yeah, because I remember when I first met you, I assumed you were Kiwi.
Which
happens to me quite often, with people from Australia. I assume they are from New Zealand and they say, no.
Yes,
Yeah, a lot of people from outside Australia and New Zealand can find it hard to discern between the two accents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas for Australians and Kiwis, it's very it's very clear who's a Kiwi and who's Australian.
Yeah, that's what I have been told.
So I'm just curious now, can you just tell me, maybe break that down a little bit? Because I've already kind of forgotten exactly the where I was going.
Yes.
The question, Clara.
What have you noticed, the main difference between Australia, living in Australia and New Zealand, culturally or in general, how it was for you?
That's right. The main difference is it feels it's a little tricky to describe in some ways. So, because in some ways all the road signs are the same, a lot of the architecture is similar, when I first came here, it felt like New Zealand I was in Australia, but 30 years ago. And I was kind of 30 years ago, I mean, it's like almost the 80s, right? So when I was a kid in the 80s, I loved Melbourne. I grew up in Melbourne. And I loved how at a certain time of the day, there would be no more traffic. You know, it's a big city, but back when I was a kid, it would go quiet for some time. And now Melbourne is busy all the time.
Yeah, it's quite a busy city.
Yeah. So I think when I came here, there was this charm of a time in my life that felt more quiet. And that really called to me, that really resonated for me personally. And it took me some time to begin to understand the cultural differences. Because things look similar, the language is similar or the same. There are specific differences. So just to speak to the Aboriginal culture and the Maori culture. So there's some very big differences between New Zealand and Australia from the Indigenous population. I'm a white Caucasian male. I grew up in Australia. In a very white place. There's a lot of similarities here to where I grew up in many ways. And then understanding some of the cultural differences definitely took some time. For me, Australia is big, it's abundant. And there is a sort of sense of, I think people, there's a sense of enoughness, whereas I think traditionally New Zealand has been a bit of it's a smaller country, it's not traditionally as wealthy as Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've just noticed that it's a little bit more, there's not quite as much as in Australia. And I think that's why Kiwis often travel, because, you get better pay usually, there's higher wages, there's more work. There's a sense of real do-it-yourself here in some ways. I think a lot of Kiwis, they're have come from a place of being handy, of growing food, and I think we're losing that a little bit in our culture today. But so there is sort of a little bit of a cultural difference there. It feels a bit, and I don't really know how to describe that. Like, I don't want to be disrespectful, or I don't want to say one's better or worse, because I don't think it is. But there's definitely a difference in that it seems a little bit more to me, a little bit more laid back. Now, I think Kiwis are pretty laid back people, but I think that Australians can be even more laid back than Kiwis. Yeah, can be.
I didn't know that.
And this is a big generalization. You know, this is a big generalization because Kiwis are pretty chilled out. Yeah. But I think Australians there can be even more chilled out. And then obviously to me, probably the most noticeable thing is like the Maori to the Aboriginal. So yeah. There's definitely a higher percentage of Maori population in New Zealand. There's in some ways more connection to the culture in this country than with the Aboriginals in Australia. So I really appreciate the sort of Indigenous connection in New Zealand. Because I think Indigenous cultures are often bringing a part of the culture that the West has left behind. You know, so I would talk about that as sort of, you know, and I'm using broad terms here, but like say, like a spiritual aspect to how they view the world that is a lot now lost a lot to the Western sort of culture. So I think that brings a really special element to New Zealand that is hard to describe, and I don't have the words in Maori because my te reo is kind of non-existent. But I think like more of that Indigenous, more Maori in culture, more Maori values in culture is really helpful for a progressive society that values sort of the natural sort of wonders of the earth. Whereas, you know, the West is sort of a little bit of a culture that sort of eats everything up, and capitalism is sort of, you know, a really big part of that, that we're not really leaving much else. Whereas the Indigenous cultures are like, well, we look after things first, and then by everything being looked after, we get looked after as well. So for me, I really like the connection, but I haven't studied a te reo course. I haven't connected that deeply with the Maori side of things, but I think that's a wonderful aspect of being in New Zealand, is feeling that strongly. And, you know, Australia is a big place. You feel that in the north and in the west, in certain parts of Australia, it's there. But it feels like there's much more sort of, I don't know, maybe because there's the Maori here, it's like almost one language. There's different variations of te reo and Maori through the country, but everyone can understand it. The language is strong. It's what has come back to be taught in schools, which it seems much more fragmented in Australia. But I know it's strong in some places, so I don't want to discount that. It can be hard to talk about this stuff, you know, in broad terms. So, you know, I apologize to anyone that, you know, if I'm getting things wrong. I'm sure I am. Yeah.
It's all good. And I think you mentioned very nice about the culture here, you know, and coming back to the nature and to the things that we already have, and we just have to take care, you know, more than in the Western. So, like, for me, like coming from Europe, you know, from Romania, we also going through similar situations. So everything is like more capitalized, which here it's more like, you know, you take care of your things, you appreciate what you have. It's more like abundance, as you said. Yeah. And when you were in Australia, did you also do yoga, or you were a yoga instructor, or?
So
what was your profession then?
I was a farmer.
Yeah. Nice.
I was an organic vegetable farmer. So I had maybe at the peak of my farming empire, I had 6 acres of high production market garden. And this was maybe sort of 4 or 5 staff. And then I would have volunteers. So I'd have woofers, and other kind of random volunteers that would be coming through. And that was a pretty dynamic and busy lifestyle. And so that was a really kind of joyful but very intense time of life. Because I was working a lot. And if for people that who have never done organic farming before, which is most of the population, because it's not a popular kind of job, it's physically extremely demanding. There's a lot of heavy lifting. There's a lot of manually, it's really quite an intense job. So that including running a business, running staff, managing books, driving tractors and vans, and you're a bit of a jack of all trades. So it's a very cool, fun lifestyle, but it kind of wore me down.
Yeah, like working every day, I guess, no? Also, working every day, almost every day, you would
have. Yeah, usually be, 6 days. Yeah. Usually I would have to go to the pool and lie around in the pool on Sunday and sleep and try to recover.
A lot of people like to romanticize the, you know, back to the land movement kind of thing and the organic farming. So it's nice to hear somebody that's experienced it and doesn't, you know, speak necessarily about, oh, yeah, is this perfect lifestyle? I can imagine it was quite the grind.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, most farmers, you know, depending on the farming, but I think most farmers know that it's a lifestyle choice.
Yeah.
So that with that lifestyle choice comes the farm as the priority. So I prioritize the farm over pretty much every other aspect of my life. And I would fit little things in around. And the connection for me with my yoga and my meditation was that helped me stay kind of sane and grounded.
Yeah.
And healthy physically, because there's a lot of physical labor. The asanas, the physical movements of the yoga, most days would keep my body happy, and then the meditation would keep my mind focused. So sometimes I would get to work 20 minutes early, and I would set up like a few pillows and wrap myself in blankets. And I sort of had an inside outside area, and then my staff would come to work, and they would like find me meditating on a bench. And they would say, oh, hey, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I was just figuring out what we were going to do for the day. and so I'd have to, like, stop meditating, get off the bench, and then, like, write a list down of everything we were doing, and we would carry on. And another kind of fun, like, I kind of meditate everywhere because it's hard to fit it in. So it's like you got to find, oh, where can I'll meditate here, I'll meditate there in the city or up a tree or wherever you can. And often the cockatoos, because in Australia, if you know, the sulfur-crested cockatoo, so that's a big bird. It's a big white bird. It probably stands a foot and a half tall. It's got the brain capacity of like a two to three-year-old toddler.
Oh, really?
And they have these big beaks and they've got these strong feet. So basically they love causing havoc. So they'll eat, like they'll pull all the fruit off your tree. I was surrounded by vineyards, so they'd come for the grapes.
Yeah.
But then like they would come and pull up all your seedlings.
Mm.
And they tended to have a time of year that they would really love to come around. So like in the depths of winter when it was cold and you're in bed, they would all come down and start ripping stuff up in the farm. And so my strategy was to go out there at dawn or just pre-dawn. I would have a pallet, which I'd have a piece of cardboard on, a cushion, a blanket. I'd be full wrapped head to toe. It'd be freezing. It'd be 0 degrees because that's frosty in inland Australia. And I would just sit there and meditate and be like, okay, it's going to happen. And maybe 20 minutes later, when the sun sort of comes up, you'd hear this, and it's like, okay, here it comes.
They are coming.
And it would come and I'd wait and it'd sit in this little tree and I would just be, and it wouldn't know that I was there because I'm all still and wrapped up. And then at some point I would just like throw down my shawl or my blanket and just jump up and go, ah, and scare it off.
Yeah.
You know, so I would do that for like a month or two until the cockatoos kind of was like, there's the guy's there, that crazy guy's there. So we're not going to come around and rip his plants up.
Oh, did it work?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Okay. Yeah. It's all about being present. So if the animals know that you're there, they won't come back.
Yeah. Another spot.
Yeah. But I just had to figure out a way of like working in cockatoo scaring program around my life. And, you know, what are you going to do? I just, you know. So that was kind of an example of like kind of how bizarre farming is. Like, you know, you could have had an air gun or something if you wanted to go a more manual way, but I didn't have an air gun, so yeah.
This is so funny. Yeah.
Yeah,
I never heard.
Yeah. And here in New Zealand, are you also growing some veggies where you live, or have you keep that in a way?
Yeah, so when I came, I was teaching a few classes, not so much. And so I had a lot of spare time. And, you know, when you're teaching yoga, you teach usually in the morning or in the evening. Sometimes there is a lunch class. But it means that I'm like, well, I've got to do something. Like, I can't sit around. And so I found a piece of land up near on Airport Drive. And the soil there was just incredible. So that belonged to a guy, Mike Browers, and he was kind enough to sort of just let me grow there. And I was there for maybe 2 or 3 years. And that over that time, a couple of my friends were farmers. We joined together. Mm-hmm. So that went from like me just growing a little bit of stuff. I was selling a little bit of stuff at the yoga studio that belongs to Zara. So that Zara Browse, the daughter of Mike Browse, there was a connection there. And yeah, I was growing, I was selling stuff through the yoga studio. I had a little stall there and I was like selling stuff word of mouth. So I had a little like side hustle. And then that kind of grew because my friend Carl, I bought his house, so Freeman Farms, and around his house he had an urban farm. So we had the urban farm and the farm in Bell Block, and we were bringing stuff together and selling, doing boxes, delivered boxes around town. So that was, that sort of got to a point where was going, was good, but Carl ended up getting a teaching job at WIT, and then Phil, the other partner, he was busy going through, you know, he was going through kind of a divorce and he was working his other business. And so I, at some point I'm like, well, it started small and I was like, yay, I'm not really farming. Yeah. I'm just growing stuff. And then it sort of turned into a business and I was like, oh, actually I've got too much to do. And that's why I left farming, because I was too busy. So I've stepped back from growing now for maybe a year and a half or 2 years. But I still can't, like my garden's quite big. You know, I've started a banana plantation. I've started growing white sapotes. I've got avocados. So I can't really stop growing because it's so satisfying.
It's growing, right? Yeah.
And, but it's just so much fun, like growing plants. I think people often, if you haven't had the experience, then often I think people miss how wonderful it is. It's kind of like having a child or something. Like, you know, you become very close and then it feeds you. It's like I've been eating my bananas for 5 months. I haven't had to buy, I don't think, I might have bought like maybe 5 individual bananas from the shop in the last 5 months. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was also eating yesterday. I took some carrots out from my garden and it was so nice and tasty, you know, and we were like, it was, I think, the last carrots this year. I don't know if I can plant more.
The last carrots, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It was not so now. Nice, so nice, yeah.
Yeah, you have to plan ahead. I've still got 2 beds of carrots, so.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
see yeah. Okay, I know when to come.
Because they stay happy in the ground until kind of September, October.
Really?
Yeah, so the ground becomes like a fridge, so all your root vegetables just kind of happy hang out there, and then you just eat them over winter from the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but you can't plant anything anymore because it's too cold.
If you manipulated, you could, like, maybe if you got things to germinate under plastic. If you manipulate your environment, you can still grow here a little bit. But yeah, don't stop planting broccoli or lettuce or silver beet or maybe rocket. Like, there are some things that will still grow, just slowly.
Slowly.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to hear about your journey into yoga as somebody that's done yoga for a long time and been going to classes for a long time. It's typically, at least in the West, quite a female-dominated activity.
Yeah.
So to sit across from another male who does yoga, I'd be interested to hear about your journey into eventually becoming an instructor.
Yeah,
it's funny. It's a big story in some ways. So I'll do just my best to kind of bring it into a few minutes. I think yoga for me started not as yoga. It started as doing a Tai Chi course in Chiang Mai in 2004. And at the time, my friends had been traveling around Southeast Asia, basically drinking and, I don't know a better way to put it, but like sleeping around and drinking their way around Southeast Asia, which a lot of young people do. And I think it's a fantastic thing. If you're young, if you want to do that, go for it. But it wasn't really my cup of tea. And I spent a few months traveling with them and we had a really good time and lots of good memories. But when we kind of split up as a group, I ended up in Chiang Mai and I picked up a course there, a Tai Chi course. And that Tai Chi course taught me to meditate and I was 24 years old. And it taught me to do sort of moving meditation, which was, you know, the Qigong, the form. And so this gave me like an entryway into, I guess, something that I'd never touched in on before, which felt really good for me personally. So I took that for like 3 years and then in Australia, I was living in the country and I was like, oh, there's no one doing Tai Chi. It's not that popular, but lots of people doing yoga. And because I was farming, I'm like, well, I need to look after my body. So after a long time of going, I'm not a yogi, I just do Tai Chi, I'm too cool for yoga, or I don't want to know about it, I've got my Tai Chi, I'm happy. I did my first, the first yoga class I ever had was starting like a 1 week retreat in Byron Bay. And that was three yoga classes a day. Very intensive. Yeah. There was not, I don't think there was any yin yoga then. So this was just all vinyasa, three times a day and meditation. And I pretty much spent that whole week, like I pretty much came back from that because I'd never done a yoga class. I came back from that retreat kind of just being able to teach what they taught me.
Right.
Because I had no pre-programming. So then I came back with a whole yoga program. And it felt very natural to teach people. So I would have, you know, visitors, woofers, people come and I could teach them meditation and I was very into it. And because I was in the country, I couldn't go to classes. So I had my own practice. It was all about my own practice. So I think that developed my sort of connection with yoga to a quite a deep personal level and a very self-resourceful kind of practice. And then after doing that kind of thing for a few years, going away to retreats and having like my winter break every couple of years, I'd find a retreat up in Mission Beach or wherever I could find a warmer climate and, you know, what I thought looked like a good teacher, I would go. And then in 2015, I finally convinced my little brother to come on a yoga teacher training. I was a little bit shy to do the yoga teacher training on my own. And I convinced him to come along. And that was in Fiji 2015. And what was kind of strange was I really psyched myself up. Like I didn't drink for 3 or 6 months before. I got very clean, very pure, did my yoga practice. I was doing 5 minute headstands. Like I was just trying to go hard out. And when we got there, I realized that there were some people that like didn't even really have a yoga practice. And I was like, whoa, I've really pushed the outer limits of yoga and I can just relax. And that was an amazing 25-day experience. Eat, sleep, yoga, eat, sleep, yoga, eat, sleep, yoga. And I just got so into it. And it was kind of nice because my brother met his still partner from that experience. So that was pretty cool. And kind of from that point in time, I started teaching a class a week to friends. And yeah, just always really enjoyed being able to hold space for people. So that's always been something that has been there, that really enjoying holding space, being a facilitator, having fun, and doing it in a way that I think like yoga is like to me a very safe practice, like sort of energetically it's quite a safe space. So people come in, they feel good, they want to be there. So it's so nice to be in a space where people want to be, where they want to experience something that's greater than themselves. And I feel like it's a real privilege and honor to be able to be the person at the front of the room. And then I got a second teacher training in 2017 with Annerique Favell. So she's an amazing yoga teacher in Sydney. I very highly recommend her. She's got lots of stuff on, you know, YouTube and out there in the sphere. And then I kept sort of working with her and did trainings in, you know, in more in sort of Shivaya Tantra. Now, you know, that word has a lot of connotations, but basically it's working with masculine and feminine energy. And so there's the goddesses, the Hindu goddesses and the gods, so like Shiva and Brahma and all of the gods and Kali, and there's Durga and lots of the other female gods. And so I ended up doing trainings in both of those, you know, and it's very similar to other kinds of yoga. It just has a particular sort of focus on certain energies. And then, yeah, I just bring that into my teaching. So, yeah, I've done some retreats. I've done workshops. I'm feeling really good as a teacher now, in terms of quite grounded and pretty relaxed, which is really nice. It's taken a few years to get there. It is a female dominated space,
yeah,
which is really lovely because luckily women are awesome. but it's also super nice having blokes, guys come in to practice to get a little bit of more, you know, I don't think yoga is easy. I think it's hard.
It's quite hard.
Yeah.
Both mentally and physically.
Mentally and physically, yeah. So, you know, I love having any men, but I love having strong men in my class, you know, and then they've got, you know, beautiful energy and, yeah, it's great. So hopefully more, you know, hopefully there's more guys come along.
Mm.
Yeah,
I resonate with that because, yeah, I enjoy having diversity in the class when I am teaching. You can feel like, I love teaching only for women also and doing things for women, but I feel sometimes it's like plenty of things only for women. And I feel perhaps not the same for like, yeah, like mixed spaces or only for men. And you can feel the energy in the room is different when you have both men and women in the class.
So any listeners who are interested in coming to one of your classes, can you talk about where you offer classes here?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So I just taught a class. I do classes in Aokura Monday and Friday, 9:15. Mm. The Monday it's at the hall and the Friday is at St. James Church, which is literally over the road. The Monday is more of a powerful class, more of a physical class. And the Friday is a little bit more of a more... sort of relaxed class, and we also often will be doing mantra. So I've been learning harmonium over the last 6 months, so we have some music and some sound. So they're kind of my standalone classes that I run for myself. And then I've been working at Riva for the last 6 years, so teach there on Mondays and Wednesdays and Sundays and Fridays. So Monday is from 5:30, there's a double, so I teach the vinyasa, the yin. Wednesday, the double vinyasa yin. Friday, 6 a.m. Sunday night yin. So also teach a lot of yin because that's very popular and people need to relax, so people love coming in for the yin sessions. And I teach on flex on Friday lunchtime as well, so yeah, they're the classes that I do.
Busy schedule.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm doing 9 classes and it feels good, but I probably could be doing, I think like 11 and 12 classes is a really nice kind of place to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Wow, amazing. Yeah, I would like to come one time.
Yeah, I love you.
You're all invited.
Yeah, okay,
thank you. I saw you also run an event recently about something called the 5 Rhythms?
The 5 rhythms, yes.
Yeah, I am curious about it. What is it? Is it similar to ecstatic dance? Is it different?
Mm. Yeah. This, like, I have lots of favorite things, and a lot of them are to do with, being in a space where you can feel really human. So I would count, feeling really alive, like pushing your body. So that could be surfing, it could be at the gym, it could be in a yoga class. But one thing that we've been doing for a long time as humans is we've been together. We've been sitting around fires together. We've been chanting together and we've been dancing together. So the 5 rhythms is a coming together to dance together. And it's based upon the woman Gabrielle Roth, who is from the States originally. She's dead now, but she came up with a thing called 5 rhythms. And the 5 rhythms are working with the different energies. So there's 5 different energies. So the first energy is the feminine. So that's flow, like water. And the second energy is masculine. So that's your staccato. So that's a bit more hard-edged, a little bit more, say, maybe powerful or straight moving lines. And then the third one is chaos. So that's sort of like this idea of when the masculine and feminine collide and there's like an explosion of movement, then that's the chaos movement. So that takes its own shape and form. And then out of chaos, like the phoenix rises. So that's kind of like the lyrical. So the fourth rhythm is lyrical. And that is what comes out of chaos, which is a very fun and playful space. And then after that is stillness. So the last rhythm being stillness. So 5 rhythms is a wave. So you gear the music to kind of rise up to a peak and come back down again. So the one that I did had 2 peaks. So the 2 peaks mean you kind of get in on the first wave, and then you can really go for it or really get into it on the second wave. So we had, so I've been doing a few five rhythms. I usually do it every year for my birthday. It's like a birthday ritual for me because no one puts it on here, and it's my favorite form. I think there's lots of good forms. I think they're all great. But five rhythms, again, moving meditation, like the Qigong, moving meditation, yoga, moving meditation. I'm in my body, I'm feeling everything, and I'm moving my body. And so this is really important, I think, for me, but I think for everyone pretty much. So yeah, it's, you know, there's more to say on it, but it's a really free and wonderful space to be in. It's a safe space. There's no touch, no drugs or alcohol. Usually it's a nice time of day, so you get to bed by 10. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you want to go to bed at 10, you can go to bed and have it be asleep by then. But yeah, for me, it was a really, usually when I love dancing, I always have, but often it would involve like having to have at least one or two drinks to get relax a bit, to be able to move my body. And so when I found five rhythms, I was very self-conscious, I was very shy, but after doing it a few times, I realized that everyone's just there having a good time, and nobody remembers how you look when you're dancing. You don't go home and go, oh, remember that guy, how he was doing that thing and that it was totally stupid? Nobody does that. And when I realize that, I'm like, awesome. Now I can be totally myself. So it was very liberating. Yeah.
And it's so good that you can bring this to the community because, like as I saw, you know, coming here from Romania where we dance without any alcohol, my husband always says, you know, when you go to a Romanian dance, everybody's holding hands in a circle and doesn't matter if it's small or big. We are all dancing.
That's so nice.
Yeah, and I was missing this here, so I would really want to come and see how it is, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, without any alcohol and everything.
Fantastic. Well, let's do it. We'll put one on for the Romanians.
Yeah, yeah. Bring the Romanians in Spanish.
Yeah.
In Spanish, right?
Yeah, don't the Latin community. Right? They love dancing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When is the event?
So the event was,
this was
a past tense conversation.
It's a past,
But I will put another one on and I will let you know.
I will look in.
Yeah. And I usually do. So I don't talk during the dance. It's like you're totally in your own space, but there is a little bit of often a little description of the rhythms and how you can move to them. So there's usually a little kind of like here. So if you come and you're like, I don't know what's going on. Mm. Like the facilitator often does a little demonstration and, you know, I make myself look a little bit silly at the start and everyone's like, oh, well, if he's prepared to look silly, so am I. Yeah.
Such a great way of, you know, just expressing yourself without any other stuff in your system, right?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. The best ways to get high are usually without putting anything in your body.
Yes. I didn't know that something like that exists here also. Yeah. So yeah, great. And you said that you are also yoga teacher and also, you know, dancing. And is there any other passions that you have besides that? Or
just for example, I took up surfing two or three years ago. So that's a bit of a passion now. You know, that's something that, you know, surfing, you get a bit addicted to just the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, I love old literature. I love music. I really like history. I think philosophy, I haven't studied philosophy, but I love philosophy. I love, you know, music, so... I'm not really sure what passion to talk about, to be honest.
It's a lot of them, right?
And it's always
them together, But I was just curious about, what other passions. So obviously you described them quite well.
Have you ever had a job? Or have you always worked for yourself?
No, I had jobs when I was young, so in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. But I... didn't really, like, I was living in Melbourne when I was sort of, I left Melbourne when I was about 24. And I moved to an intentional community in the country and in country Victoria. And that's where I started kind of like a self-apprenticeship in farming. And I had some mentors. But I think from that point on, I was kind of like, you know, I can either work my ass off and kind of live to work, so to speak. And I look around, you know, I don't really look around me now, but back then I was looking around me, and maybe it was me, maybe it was my projection onto the world, but I see a lot of miserable people who are getting mortgages and paying off big debt and working, and sometimes it feels like people are just like zombies, or there's a part of them is not alive.
Yeah.
And I want to be fully alive. I'm like, you know, one of my things is like, I want to feel really alive in my life, because we get one life. And so once I kind of found a way to live outside of the sort of the system, I guess, I was like, oh, this is cool. I wonder if I could make this work. It took a long time, and it was hard. It's sometimes, I think when you're young and you're going against the grain, I think it can be really tough. But it's also really fun. So I haven't had a job for, I guess, 20 years.
Good on you. Good on you.
But I might be getting one soon. Yeah, I might be doing a bit of part-time work with a mate. So, okay. Yeah, but yeah, he used to farm with me. So sometimes it's just like, it's nice to do some things that I don't have to think,
yep.
You know.
The structure's already there.
I wake up, he does everything, I jump in the car, so yeah, you know, I'm open to getting a job. I don't think a job's a bad thing, but yeah, I've really enjoyed the last 20 years.
Good on you.
Yeah.
This is so good. Yeah.
Sort of entered that space myself. I was I don't know if you listened to the show and heard my interview before I started hosting, but
I haven't.
My 20s I describe as being very time rich. And then went back kind of to the more mainstream kind of flow, realized, oh, I really value being time rich. So yeah, really focused my energy towards getting that back. Here I am.
Nice. Yeah, well done.
Thank you. And I hope to never have to have a job again. I'm open to choosing the right kind of thing where there's a real passion there and a real real desire to be involved in that kind of position. But yeah,
it's nice to hear, and it's nice to you know, it's inspiring to be around people who have kind of found their way. And you know, part of the reality for a lot of people that if you have kids and you know, you're just trying to get along in life, like, you know, you kind of got to do what you got to do, right? Like, so, you know, there's for me, there's a sense of like, I've sort of created my life, but, you know, in some ways I'm also privileged to be able to do that. So I want to acknowledge the hardworking parents and people out there just trying to get by, because, you know, you got to work, you got to find a way to earn money.
Yeah, it's a necessity. I can also relate to the kind of the struggle of doing your own thing at a young age.
And yeah.
I was living out of my car for the better part of 4 years, and camping in public land, you know, night after night after night, and very isolated and very a lot of solitude. And yeah, there were a lot of lonely nights out there, really questioning whether if I'm on the right path.
Yeah, like, you wake up in your car on year three, it's freezing cold, and you're like, oh
yeah, I'm in the dirt.
Hello at the window.
Yeah.
I haven't bathed in 3 days. Yeah. And sleeping in the dirt. And yeah, the stars are nice, but
yeah.
Yeah,
it's quite cold out there, right? And I think New Zealand is bringing a lot entrepreneurial culture. You know, I don't find so much like in Europe for us, entrepreneurial was not so big. If you want to make your own company, it's so difficult, especially in Romania. There are so many, you know, paperwork that you have to fill in and other stuff that you have to do and pay a lot of money. But here, if you want to be a sole trader, for example, it's so easy.
Yeah, or even combining both, perhaps like having like a daily job and then having like your side thing that you start to be little by little, and perhaps at some point that can replace the daily job. For example, that's easy to combine here.
Yeah, I think also for the kids, you know, at school, like also our kids are learning how to, for example, sell lemonade, right? Because I also told my kids they want to go now in a trip to Singapore. And I told them, you know, if you want that, maybe we can earn some money and just go there, sell some lemonade or some lollies, or and you can have some money to go somewhere, because, you know, we can't have everything.
And there's like government support here.
Yeah.
So if you want to start up something, you can go to Venture Taranaki and they'll, you know, they'll help you out with ideas and give you someone to talk to and make resources available. It's a really, I think it's a really unique and fun part of like the culture is that there's a lot of people giving things a go. And yeah, it brings a real, a really nice energy to, you know, the place. Yeah.
Is it the same in Australia, like very entrepreneurial, or is it just here in New Zealand?
I think Australians are pretty similar.
Same.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I would say that there's a lot of people giving things a go in Australia and a lot of encouragement for people to, you know, be entrepreneurial and try stuff out. I think there's a lot of people that like to work for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what I've noticed, yeah.
I think geographically speaking, it creates an interesting situation, being kind of tucked away to let new ideas form. And yeah, thinking of kind of like how evolution works and with Darwin's, you know, Galapagos Islands and noticing different birds that all evolve from each other. And it's that isolation that leads to the diversity. And so, yeah, I think being kind of tucked away in a corner of the world allows for that evolution to take place, that kind of separate new ideas to form.
Yeah.
I think that New Zealand, there is a difficulty just because of the size of the markets. There's just so few people here.
Yeah.
So if you had something that's scalable or was strictly digital and you know, like a software thing that was available to the international market, that'd be a great opportunity. But if you're selling something, if you're, you know, strictly kind of individual customer focus, is quite difficult here.
Totally agree. I think the small market in New Zealand makes it challenging.
Very.
And so that you have to be both good at what you do and you have to do sort of something that people want. Definitely in the yoga sphere, like running my own classes, there's the challenge to get people there. And that's because it's not a big community and it's not a big yogic community. So that definitely is something you've really got to work at. And, you know, I think part of my yoga journey is to at some point be in a place where there's a bit more yoga action going on, where there's more people who are into it and filling it up. But I think if you work hard, you can get it to work, but it just takes a long time. And also, like somewhere like Taranaki, like depending on, you know, maybe it seems like also people come and go from this place as well. So sometimes you get established and then people move away and it's like, okay, now I've got to get more people to come in and this and that.
It's no time to breathe, right?
Yeah.
So New Zealand's quite movious. Kiwis do
I like
kind
this
of
word.
From places.
Movious.
Yeah, this
is a good one.
I picked that up when I was living in Zambia.
Yeah, right.
You're quite movious. it does seem like people just do tend to move from city to city to city and just kind of bounce around the country and do that here.
Yeah, I think
that
the
makes it tough. The sense of community, that the consistent base of people involved with things. There's a lot of turnover.
It's I think it can make it tricky, but I think that's where sometimes, like in Oz, so to speak, like there's an extra 20 million people. So you've got bigger cities, bigger peripheries around the cities, bigger, smaller communities. So there's a bit more to work with there.
Yeah.
And that's definitely something that I think, you know, you've got to assess in terms of like what you're trying to do, what you're trying to achieve, what the realities are. And you know, probably having multiple things that you do, like multiple little jobs, so you can kind of live your passion but also have enough to get by.
It's amazing.
And
because we have still 5 more minutes, I think you have to go to your yoga class, right?
I'm going to training over in Topol, I've got a 4-hour drive after this.
Wow.
But that's all right. I might stop on the way and have a surf.
That will recharge you.
Yeah.
So we have usually the last question for our guests. So if there is somebody new in town, what would you tell them, for example? How can they make themselves at home here in New Plymouth or New Zealand?
Or New Zealand. How can you make yourself at home if you're new to town? I mean, I was kind of lucky because I knew people and they introduced me to their community. So I felt very connected pretty quickly, which I was very, very grateful for. But I think if I came with not those connections, I mean, you've just got to get out and about, don't you? Like, you've got to go to yoga classes. You've got to go to maybe social events, like they had the paddle out yesterday for the, you know, the seabed mining protest. Like, you've kind of got to put yourself out in the community because there is a cool community doing stuff here, and you've just got to tap into it and be a bit brave. You know, sometimes, you know, I think when I first moved, I was a bit shy. So I'm just like, oh, I've got friends who've got friends. Sweet. Sweet as. Sweet as. But yeah, I think being active, being out in the community, finding your people. And then once you've found your people, you know, I think it can be sometimes often like getting to know new people can be really tough. But often, like, once you find a few people that is like your people, like, you know, have a similar vibrational resonance, you know, people will want to see you again and catch up with you again. So it's just about finding just a few people and then they'll know a few. And yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's what I would probably do if I had to redo it again. Or I might just come here and go walking in the mountains and not talk to anyone. I'm not sure.
I think it's a great answer. You know? And it's always like everybody that we ask, they say the same thing, you know, that they want to connect and just go out there and meet other people, which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. So I think we had a great time with you, Robbie.
Oh, well, yeah, it was lovely to be in the station with you three.
Yes. Yeah. And also, I mean, we didn't know each other before, so I think it's a great opportunity to meet again, maybe do some dancing or yoga.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm happy to join your yoga classes.
Yeah, I mean, it's so lovely to be in a room with three people that are all into the stuff that I'm into.
Yeah.
And when I put on an event, I'll let you know, and you can let the people on the radio land know. And
make
something happen.
We'll make sure to at least put it on our Facebook page, if not announce it on air.
Cool.
Yeah, we can do that. Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you, Brian and Clara, for being here with me today. And thank you, Robbie, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Have a great week out there at Taranaki and beyond.
Yes.
See you next week.
Enjoy.
Ciao.
Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to be part of our show, please contact us on our Facebook page, Making Yourself at Home.
We would love to hear your story. You can download our show from Spotify, Access Radio Taranaki website, or Apple Podcasts.
Hello, 大家好，我是杨新宇。
大家好，我是苏晨晨。
您正在收听 Access Radio 104.4 FM。
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.